You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is episode 40, and today we're going to be talking about gay rodeo. Before we get into our podcast, let me remind everybody to please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, as well as the YouTube page for the Gay Florida Man Podcast. Recently, I watched the documentary from 2014, and it was called Queens and Cowboys, A Straight Year on the Gay Rodeo. If you haven't seen it, I highly suggest that you check it out. As I watched it, it reminded me that one of the people that's a regular on our podcast is Robbie, and Robbie is heavily involved with the International Gay Rodeo Association. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have Robbie come on and talk about all the activities? And why is there a gay rodeo association? Why wouldn't people just go to traditional rodeos that have been around forever? And as we talk today, you're going to understand exactly why. So let's jump right into it and start talking about gay rodeos. So joining us to talk about gay rodeo is our good friend, Robbie. Robbie, how are you?
I am doing quite well today. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Did you have a nice Christmas?
Yeah, actually, it was really relaxing. Normally, we're running between 30 or 40 families. I'm Mexican after all. So we normally have a lot of places to stop and see. This year was a little bit different since everybody's kind of sick, avoiding trying to get sick. We just did our own thing, which was nice. It was great. We kind of took it easy and just hung out. Ate, drank, played games, did gay stuff, you know. So
gay guys are really good at games because I've dated enough to know that they are really fucking good at playing games.
A little shade in there. Jesus. Let's not get into that today.
The people that I've dated that are listening, they know they're probably like, oh, fuck, I don't want to listen to the rest of this episode.
Turn off.
I heard the episodes with Barbie, so I'm like, no, I don't need to hear this anymore. I remember that you and I had talked a while back. I knew that you were involved with rodeo. When you had said rodeo, I'm like, oh, I'm into rodeo too. I've been to Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. So I connected with you really well on that, but then I realized that it's completely different.
Correct. You're an idiot. God, Jesus Christ.
You're not the first person to accuse me of being an idiot.
So. Yeah, no, completely different. One is, I can't even entertain that. That's just ridiculous. Anyways, continue.
So we had talked briefly about it, and then just about a month ago, I had watched this documentary from 2014 called Queens and Cowboys, A Straight Year on the Gay Rodeo. And I saw it on Peacock, the streaming service, and it was a great documentary. And it gave me insight. And I'm like, I got to talk to Robbie more about this stuff because I had lived in Utah for 20 years and I was aware that there's rodeo stuff and Western stuff, cattle, cowboys, all this stuff. Don't think I've ever been to an event. And then to find out that the gay community had their own activities was fascinating. In this documentary, they follow several people in the course of the year, and it gives you insight as to what activities they do. Got me more interested in you and your story and how you got involved with it. So for the people listening that have never heard anything about this, there is the IGRA, International Gay Rodeo Association. Now, I'm just going to quickly say that what their mission is, which is providing associations with the tools to produce quality events, promoting in a positive way the LGBTQ country western lifestyle, And three, supporting amateur sportsmanship through participation, competition, and recognition. How did you get involved with this? Like, tell me your story on how you pursued this interest.
It all started once upon a time at a bathhouse.
That's a different ride than a bowl. Wow.
Little do you know.
Whoa.
So, no, to be completely honest, I actually watched that documentary. That was literally the first time I had been involved or even heard about the International Gay Rodeo Association. Watching this documentary, I don't know what it was, but I felt some kind of pull or attraction to it where I felt like, you know, I grew up playing soccer. I feel like that's a Mexican thing. I did years and years of soccer, and it was more so like, that's what you're supposed to do. I never really had an interest in playing football. I never had interest in doing baseball or any other sport for the most part, really. But for some reason, this spoke to me. So I jumped online, did some research, and I actually discovered that Utah had just reformed the Utah Gay Rodeo Association, also called the UGRA. When I found that out, I had discovered that the UGRA had been established, I want to say, in 1982 is when it was first established. So it's been around for a long time. But unfortunately, the Utah's chapter kind of dwindled a little bit as time went on. I mean, for a multitude of reasons. One of the biggest ones was HIV and AIDS. It started targeting a lot of people. And it became very scary to attend these events, or not even attend the events, but everybody was being affected by it. So rodeo, specifically this gay rodeo circuit, started to take a back seat. So a lot of different organizations and state chapters throughout the U.S. really, really dwindled. Utah, of course, being one of them. So I think Utah had kind of disappeared off the map, I want to say in the early 90s, or maybe the late 90s, somewhere in there. Of course, I hadn't heard anything about it until watching this documentary and then finding out that Utah was coming back and regaining their chapter, their title back. And so I emailed somebody, I believe, and said I wanted to get involved. And the rest is honestly history. I started volunteering. I attended Pride events where the UGRA had little tables giving out information, letting people know about fundraisers or events that were happening at local bars in Salt Lake City. Just different things like that, as well as upcoming rodeo events that were happening all throughout the U.S. After a couple of years, I decided that I wanted to do something more than just raise money and attend and spread the word. I actually wanted to get into the arena and compete. Although I had wanted to from the very beginning, I was scared because I grew up not doing any kind of rodeo stuff. You know, we were in the somewhat suburbs of Ogden, and that wasn't a thing, especially for at least anybody in my family. It was scary getting involved, but or intimidating, I should say, getting involved just because I felt like I was treading into territory that I knew nothing about. The only thing that I wasn't afraid of is, for the most part, I don't want to say I'm not afraid of getting hurt, but I grew up doing a lot of manual labor and, you know, I was right there by my dad's side learning to fix things and get dirty and all of this stuff. So none of that really mattered to me, but it was, I feel like, treading in unknown territory in a sport that is very, very traditional, very rough, very, I don't know. It was something that I've never done before. But again, I wanted to do it because I knew that if I was going to reach a certain age where I looked back and thought, well, shit, I should have done that. I would regret it.
Had you ever been, Robbie, to a rodeo prior to getting involved with the gay rodeo? When you were younger, when you were a kid, you were doing the soccer thing. Had your family ever brought you to one?
Yeah, so I've attended a couple with my dad. My dad actually grew up in Texas. He lived on some decent land with his family, and so he already did a lot of that stuff. They had animals, they had stock, they had a farm or ranch life, I guess you could say. My dad, I think leaving that and coming to Utah, that made something in him want to still be around that or still not leave that behind. You know, you have those good memories. When we were little, myself and my sister in particular, he would take us to rodeos. We would go to anything from demolition derbies to anything that was just kind of rough and tumble kind of stuff. And it was always fun. It was always interesting. I didn't have much of an interest back then. I was very, very, very dedicated to my education. So anything that came and tried to fuck with that, I was really focused on school. So I didn't even bother to get involved in anything really. I had attended, but I couldn't even tell you the first thing really about rodeo, about what it's like to rodeo, how to get involved, what it takes financially, physically, mentally, emotionally, all of that stuff. There's a whole world to it that you kind of discover as you get involved.
So you had experience, or you kind of had an idea as a kid anyways, like what was involved with rodeo. I grew up in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C. I have no idea, like cowboys and bulls and horses and all this stuff. I had no idea about any of it until I watched this documentary, Queens and Cowboys. It's a whole new world to me, even though I lived out in Utah, and I know a lot of people are into that, especially during your summer months, a lot of outdoor activities in Utah.
Yeah.
And of course, like Western wear, and there's certain stores that cater to a lot of cowboys or that look. I kind of like look back and I say, God, I probably should have checked it out. I did do like a crash derby, cars out there and they run into each other. And I knew somebody that did that. And I think that was at like a fairgrounds one time for like a county fair up in Ogden or Weber County. I've never seen bull riding or lasso work or the dressing of the sheep?
Yep. Yeah.
And this is all new to me until I watched that documentary. It seems like the whole, I keep wanting to say rodeo.
Oh my God.
I'm a gay man. I am totally gay when it comes to this.
What?
Yeah, what? I do know what a reverse cowgirl is. Does that help? Do I score any points with that?
Not at all. But I
do you know what a reverse cowgirl is? Okay, so for people that are listening, I'm going to just tell you how it works. And again, this is from the internet, and this seems like a pretty legit website. In reverse cowgirl, the person receiving penetration sits on top of their partner, but instead of sitting face to face, they face away towards their partner's feet. The person on top can control the pace, rhythm, and depth of penetration. That is the reverse cowgirl. Again, I want to educate with this podcast, and you're going to walk away today saying, I know exactly how to do the reverse cowgirl. I'm glad that I listened to this episode about rodeos. I mean, rodeos.
They are, nobody's going to walk away with that kind of fucking, any kind of internal thought. They're going to be like, Jesus Christ.
The one thing I learned from that documentary is, and one thing I've always imagined, is that the standard rodeos is got to be a community that typically is not open to feminine men or male on male relationships, or maybe not even female on female relationships. Maybe it's just because I spent 20 years in Utah, Robbie, but it seems like that community would be very closed-minded, and that would drive the force to create the Gay Rodeo Association, the IGRA. Am I correct in this thought that the regular rodeos, they were not very open-minded about accepting people that live same-gender lifestyles into their organizations?
Yes. So that is actually, that's just right on the nose. Gay rodeo, for the most part, exists for the sole purpose that people that want to or have lived in this very rural, traditional, farming, ranching, Western lifestyle community or upbringing, when they want to compete in rodeo, whether they're open or not, LGBTQ plus, most, and I almost want to call it, instead of, because sometimes I want to catch myself saying normal rodeo or regular rodeo, but traditional rodeo is a very masculine, very manly sport when it comes to men. And of course, with women, women do very specific things within rodeo. You know, we'll get into it later, but most of them are like horseback events that they are doing. They're going as fast as they can to beat the clock kind of thing. Women in traditional rodeo are not allowed to bull ride or steer ride or shoot dog or anything that is going to be more of a masculine event or rugged or an event where you can really get hurt. That's traditional rodeo for you, but it's been that way for so long. Apart from that, the international gay rodeo or gay rodeo in general has been established so that way people that are openly LGBTQ+ or they're still in the quote-unquote closet or they're not sure who they are, or they're just completely heterosexual, men and women, or however they identify, can all compete and not have judgment cast upon them for wanting to do something that they love, but also compete in an event or compete in a sport that is traditionally not kind to them or does not take kindly to who they are. So as much as I would want to compete in rodeos around here, you know, it's a 50-50 situation that I walk into a rodeo and I go to apply to compete in an event or a multiple events. I have my, you know, my a rainbow watch band on, or, you know, you fill out like, who is a person that we can call in case you get hurt, and you put your spouse and I put my husband. They have the ability to reject my application solely based on that. There's no rule saying that they can't. So I can be rejected from a rodeo, but also I'm going in to, again, this traditional manly masculine sport. Not only could I get hurt in the arena, I don't mean to laugh, but not only could I get hurt in the arena, but I could also get my fucking ass kicked walking to my truck or grabbing food or getting jumped in the parking lot or something by people that don't agree with who I am. That sucks, because we should all be there to do the sport that we love, that we enjoy. But there are people that think that other things matter more. And, you know, not agreeing with somebody's sexuality or however they identify, it's just a big enough deal that I'm going to hurt you purposely, because apparently that's all that really fucking matters. I digress.
So ignorant.
That's why gay rodeo exists. It's for people that feel that their lives may be at risk, or that they want to find a community where they are not going to be judged or looked at funny or talked about negatively. They can all compete and do this thing called rodeo in a community that will have their back no matter what. And so that's why the rodeo exists. But we also, within the rodeo, of course, there's chapters all throughout the U.S. and Canada. I've heard that there's been past chapters in Mexico, competitors from overseas. You know, it's still trying to thrive in this technology-based day and age. It's this old-school kind of sport. We're trying to get out there. We're trying to make people aware that it exists, because there's kids sitting out there in the middle of BFE Montana or Wisconsin or Texas that feel that they're different, and their whole family's been rodeoing since, you know, the dawn of time, and they're expected to do the same, but they're afraid to come out, and or they still want to compete, but they know that they're going to get made fun of or beat up or bullied or whatever. And that's why gay rodeo exists.
I don't want to give away too many spoilers about the documentary, but if you do have any type of interest in the Gay Rodeo Association, I definitely recommend that Queens and Cowboys. One of the things that you talk about with the discrimination with the traditional rodeo is you had one scene in that particular movie, and you and I have talked about it before this podcast, Robbie, about the mentality of some people that feel the need to discriminate. And they caught a couple of little scenes in that documentary where you have some rednecks that say some things on camera. They got caught on audio. I think their faces were blurred out, or they were out of frame or something. That's terrifying. And what you're talking about with, you get these rednecks and you're going out to your car and they feel the need that they're going to have to bash you so that they can feel more like a man. And that's pretty pathetic. The other thing about the Gay Rodeo Association that you've already said, and I think that's so cool, again, it's also in Queens and Cowboys, is it's not just for people that are gay or family members and that sort of thing. It allows anybody to compete, and you have people competing in the gay rodeo circuit that are there because they want to win the buckles and they want to win the money, and they don't give a shit. It doesn't really matter to them. They just want to, they want to go out and have a blast and compete. I get it. And the fact that it's accepting to people that are not gay, not lesbian, I think that's really cool that they accept those people. Like, come on, come compete with us. We'll take you on. That's great. This next competition is called Bareback. I know you've never done it, so we're going to see how long you can hold on. We'll find out who's the man. So.
Oh my God.
Oh. Somebody that's interested in this and says, you know what? That is really cool. And I would love to compete. I don't know what I'm good at. Tell me about the different things that are offered at your gay rodeo. Like, what are the different events and what are the prizes, Robbie? what would have somebody have to look forward to?
So, I mean, to start off, you have traditional events that are in, again, traditional rodeo that a lot of people that are familiar with rodeo could compete in, because it's their bread and butter. It's kind of what you do at any rodeo anywhere. One of them is called mounted breakaway roping, which is you have a competitor on the back of a horse. There is a calf that is basically released from a pen and is running around, and they run really fast. So you basically have to be in tune with your horse to keep up on them. And then you have to just rope them. You have to be able to rope them successfully by the rules that the UGRA has in place, which is, again, very, very, very similar to traditional rodeo. There is team roping, which is the same exact concept, but you have a partner that you both go out into the arena at the same exact time.
Can I ask you one question, Robbie? Is that a timed event as far as the competition between you and other people roping? Is it timed to see how quickly you can get the animal roped? Is that what it is?
Correct. As of right now, the timing is always a huge deal with any event. Everybody's timed. Some events are a lot more difficult than others. So if you have a better time than, you know, your other competitors, you move up the ranks really quickly. So no matter what the event is, you want to do what you need to do as fast as you possibly can. And that is going to guarantee, of course, your first, second, third, fourth, so on and so forth. And then as you, the closer you get to being first place, the bigger the quote unquote, what's called a purse, which is pretty accurate for gay rodeo, is a certain amount of money, you know. So as the faster you are, the better you are, the more the payout is going to be, or the bigger the purse is going to be. Usually the more difficult events have the bigger purses. Something like bull riding as an example, there's not a lot of bull riders, but if you were to be a bull rider or a steer rider and you successfully stay on for that certain amount of time, you're guaranteed. And it depends on each rodeo, depending on how much they put towards it, but it can be anywhere from a few $100 to close to $1,000, depending on rodeo that you attend.
I've been riding the wrong bulls. I never get a purse with the bulls I've ridden.
God, I knew you were bottom.
Maybe I was the bull, Robbie. Maybe.
I bet. Wink. Sure, Jan. So,
Marsha.
I also shade at that, you dork. So you have the mounted breakaway, you have the team roping, which is the same thing, but one person keeps the head of the calf, the other one ropes the hind legs. There's also barrel racing, which is three barrels that are out in the arena. You have to basically do a figure eight around all three of them and then race back, and then your time stops. You have to do that without knocking the barrels over. Flag racing, if you can kind of picture it, they blow a whistle and a person on horseback is released from the far end of the arena. They race towards a barrel holding a bucket full of it looks like sand, basically. And it has a flag sitting in it, like stuck in it. And the flag is red and the handle is wooden. So they have to literally sprint by that barrel holding the bucket with the flag in it, grab it while still on horseback. And then they go almost in a complete oval, and on the direct opposite side of the arena, there's another barrel holding a bucket full of sand that's exact same size. And this bucket is like your standard, like Home Depot, like project bucket, I guess you could say. You have to stick that flag back in the sand while keeping up that speed. And then, of course, race out of the arena in that certain time. So if you were to miss the flag, you're DQ'd. You're disqualified. There's no coming back from that. Mm. So that's a really fast one, and you have some of the best people on horseback. They haul ass. I don't do horseback events just because I don't own horses, but the people that do, they're something to watch, because you're on horseback, you're chugging towards something, and you're hoping to grab it and not tip over the bucket, because if you tip over the bucket as well, that's DQ. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into that.
A lot of training, I imagine, anytime you're involved with an animal.
Yes.
Because I remember in the documentary, The Queens and Cowboys, they had one of the individuals that they follow throughout the year. He was very close to his horse. His horse was an older horse, but he was really in tune with how that animal acted.
I believe that was Wade. Yeah.
Yes.
he does all events. He's incredible. He's still competing to this day. And he is bonkers amazing. Such a good guy.
Have you met him?
Oh, yeah, multiple times. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep. He comes to, we just had convention this last fall in Denton, Texas, where all of the organizations from around the U.S. and Canada all descend on one city. And we basically make sure that the rules are still standing as they should. Mm-hmm. If there's any changes need to be made to the bylaws. And then, you know, just discuss stuff. And we do it for about 3 days. And then we all go back home. But it's a good time for everybody to see each other during the break. Because then we start back up in February for the first rodeo in Arizona. So
that was my next question, is you had said February. So what is the season like to be involved with this?
What's incredible about gay rodeo, or at least being on the gay rodeo circuit, is this community or this family that you belong to. Some people live on the East Coast. Some people live on the West Coast. Some people live, you know, just in the middle of the U.S. So no matter where you go or no matter what rodeos you attend throughout the U.S., mm-hmm. you always see these people there that put their time, their money, their time off, their gas, their vehicles, their everything to do something that they love. And it makes things completely worth it to not only do the sport again that you love, but also to see these faces that you have. They're your family away from your blood family. You go to check into a hotel, or you go on your first day of competition and you go into the contestant area and you see everybody getting ready, and there's hugs and laughter and sometimes tears, and you catch up, and it's awesome. But I digress. So when it comes to these rodeos all over the place, they're all throughout the U.S. and Canada. So myself, living in Utah, I really try to aim at all of the rodeos surrounding Utah. So, you know, Las Vegas, in Arizona, in Phoenix, you have Denver, Utah. We're actually hosting our first one in about 20 years here back in Utah this
wow.
coming year in June. So that will be putting us back on the map. And there are a lot of people all over the place, all over the U.S. that are so excited that we're basically up and running again. And so this will be another big one for people in the West to attend and compete in and earn points and money and whatnot. But yeah, I try to stay as local as I can just for, you know, financial reasons.
Of course.
Everything comes out of my pocket. Normally, everybody has the exact same thing with them. Some people are really lucky to be sponsored. So that way, you know, they have a company or a person or whoever it may be that pays for their entry fees, or even pays, like gives them certain money towards gas or lodging or whatever. So some people are sponsored, which is great. And those people are usually, they've been doing it for a minute and they're really, really good at what they do. One day I'll get there. But as of right now, like everything comes out of my pocket. So I should say mine and my husband's, but, which I'm very grateful for.
Kurt must be there giving you the side eye.
He's not home right now, but I can feel it in the air that I needed to mention that. But no, he supports me, you know, of course, emotionally, but also financially. It's also an experience for us to travel together and to see these places, see these people. He sits in the stands and really, really supports me. It's incredible. There's a lot of folks that can't have their significant others, you know, for jobs or for, you know, family, or somebody has to stay home to do whatever. So I'm really fortunate that I get to travel with Kurt quite a bit. But yeah, we try to stay as close as we can to Utah, but I think the farthest that we've gone so far is Oklahoma. I should probably pull out a map because I don't know. But Oklahoma we were at, and then we also did Missouri. And Missouri, that was something humid. Might not be going back ever again, but that's okay.
You visited Florida in August.
Do you want me to tell you something? And I'm not going to be fucking dramatic, which is the
what?
Term. I know.
Let's see if you won't be dramatic.
God damn it. Now you put me on the spot. I have never been anywhere more humid than Missouri. And I have been to Florida, and we have gone to Mexico multiple times in the summer.
Ooh.
I have never felt such humidity as it was in Missouri. I don't understand how people live there. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense. To kind of tie rodeo back into this, with rodeo, if you're a competitor, you have to abide by a certain uniform, believe it or not. So you competitors are, for the most part, you have to wear a cowboy hat, which is standard for almost all events, like 90% of the events, you have to wear a cowboy hat. You have to wear a button-down shirt, a long-sleeve button-down shirt with the sleeves rolled down and like snapped or buttoned at the wrist, and jeans, full-blown Levi's, Wrangler, whatever style, blue jean. You have to wear those and your boots.
No assless chaps.
No assless chaps, unfortunately. All chaps are assless, but you can wear a butt plug. That's fine. That's like
with a ponytail with a little tail on it.
So the horses feel a lot more comfortable when they see you with the tail.
I make these jokes, but I bet you get these jokes constantly when people hear about, you know, the Gay Rodeo Association, don't you? People's ignorance, I'm sure.
Well, one of the funniest things that I hear is when people talk about, when I mention gay rodeo or that I rodeo for the gay rodeo circuit, I think people that either don't know or they're just being asshats, they'll be like, so, like, what is it? Like, you know, you run around in glitter and, like, thongs and, like, jock straps and ride other guys or things. And I'm like, it's a full-blown-ass rodeo. The fuck you talking about? The animals aren't gay. We are. The bulls are still 800, 900,000-pound bulls. These steers, the steer riding, these are still 400, 500, 600-pound steers that we're riding or wrestling. All of these events, there's a couple of them that we have fun with. They're called camp events. Well, I can touch base with that later. But that's one thing that kind of blows my mind when people think that it's just wearing like butterfly wings and running around pretending that, you know, it's fucking Brokeback Mountain up in here.
That doesn't surprise me at all. People are so ignorant. It doesn't surprise me at all. What is the cost for people that are looking into this sort of thing as far as competing? Now, I know, of course, if you have a horse and then a trailer and the cost of travel and hotel, the fees that you would have to pay to compete for the purse or for the buckles, can you give me an idea of what people would have to look at for the cost?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly the... You can basically pay per event per day. So competition days are Saturday and Sunday. So in this case, I, hypothetically speaking, which is one of the events I compete in, is called shoot dogging. You can either, you can compete in on a Saturday or a Sunday or both days, which 99% of the people do. So I would be paying $30 for Saturday and $30 for Sunday. And that's just one event of the five events that I routinely compete in for each rodeo that I attend. And there's usually two rodeos per month. So I walk out of there with roughly, because there's some fees attached to it, but the fees aren't crazy. Then you can also pay for buddy passes. So you can pay for a pass to have somebody come behind the chutes and come into the contestant area, I guess you could say. So most people don't, but other people that travel with their significant others, I almost always get Kurt a buddy pass so he has access to the back of the grounds, you know, just for some physical encouragement. At the end of registration, I will, when all said and done, normally I'm looking at about $350 to $400, depending on the rodeo. Sometimes some states will be $30, some will be $35, some will be $40, some could be more, some could be less. So it kind of depends on the amount of contestants. Also, ideally, where you're located at. So a lot of people attend California rodeos, Texas rodeos. Denver's a huge one. There's is always, you have a lot of competitors, so their fees are sometimes a little bit lower just because they make up for it quite quickly. So with me competing in five events every single time, I would say I walk out of there with paying about $350 for just the 2 days of competition. Then, like you said, of course, we pay for the hotel. Almost every rodeo that is hosting a rodeo has what's called a host hotel, where they come to an agreement with a local hotel where they cut a deal and have a certain rate that is discounted quite a bit less than what somebody would be paying if they were just to walk in off the street and say, hey, I need a room for three or four nights. You know, it may be X amount. Well, when you go through a host hotel, you normally knock like 20%, 25% off of that. So they kind of help you out with lodging, which is great. But after everything's said and done, normally after a rodeo, we stay, you know, four nights, you know, hotel and wherever it may be. that hotel could be, you know, probably $300, $400 just for the hotel. And then you have, if you're flying, you pay for your flight, which could be God knows whatever. And depending how far you're going, or if you drive, which we do quite a bit of driving. I like to drive, so I don't mind that. The gas is kind of crazy, especially right now or in the past recently. So yeah, it adds up. So I want to say when we plan on going to a rodeo, we're looking at about $1,000 to go. Yeah.
Robbie, how many rodeos have you been to total? Do you know? Did you keep count?
Two. Or? Just two.
Gotcha.
This motherfucker. No, I'm lying.
I'm getting off that subject.
You're like,
real
oh,
fast.
So he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So, cool.
So much for the expert. I've got a bucket on springs in the back, so I'm a rodeo expert on bull riding.
I, you know, nobody better than me.
Well, so how many rodeos have you been to?
I have been to roughly, I'd probably say in the ballpark of 30
oh,
rodeos,
shit.
Maybe, since I've been involved.
That's a lot.
I'm
do you have a favorite location of all these different places? I know you do not like Missouri, you already said. Is there a particular
Jesus
place
Christ,
that you like?
Was, yeah. Missouri itself is not bad. It was the humidity that fucking was bonkers. I didn't know that humidity could be so bad that the rodeo grounds could not dry out, so it wasn't dust. It was clay, basically, is what we were competing on. There was a lot of people that didn't even want... They basically backed out of their horse events because you can break a horse's ankle if they step wrong or if they're, you know, if they're running in this arena. So it was crazy. And shoot dogging, which is steer wrestling, I don't know why, but my signature move has basically been body slamming a steer on the ground. In doing so, I body slam myself with a steer on top of me to do my event. And the first day, you know, it looked muddy. And I was like, all right, that's whatever. I'm going to get dirty. It's fine. It's rodeo. And I went out and I did my event and I body slammed this steer. And I could have swear to God I slipped a disc. It hurt. It felt like I had just slammed a grown-ass, big-ass dude on concrete. I regretted it instantaneously. And then the second day, Sunday, I had to wear a vest because it hurt so bad. Missouri is not bad. It was just really humid. But my favorite, I don't know. It's hard to say. I really enjoy going to Denver. They put on a fucking incredible rodeo. They've been doing it for quite some time. They're probably one of the biggest rodeos that they have in the circuit. They have their shit down. Like, they are great at what they do, as well as Arizona. Honestly, I'd have to say it's a tie between... Oh, shit. I don't know. Maybe I'll take it back. It's probably a three-way tie. And I'm biased because I've attended these the most. But Arizona, so Phoenix, their grounds, their arena is beautiful. It's so unique. It's completely round. It's not oval. Most arenas are. So it kind of adds a little bit of, like, a little level of difficulty because you need that oval for horses to gain speed before they do whatever they need to do. Mm-hmm. So they actually have to start further out of the grounds and run in to the arena. But nonetheless, their grounds are beautiful. It's like a botanical garden mixed with like the Alamo architecture. It's gorgeous.
Wow.
The first time we went there, I thought we were fucking lost because we were just driving further out of Phoenix area. We stumbled upon this rodeo ground and it was gorgeous. So I love that. Denver, it's always a good time. They always know what they're doing when it comes to just having anything and everything you can think of. Drinks, food, entertainment, all kinds of stuff. And then, and the rodeo grounds in Denver is sitting on a hill and it overlooks the city. And the sunsets are just perfect, especially, it's almost, I hate to say magical because real gay, but anyways, it's magical. It's amazing. And then last but not least is Las Vegas. Their grounds are, they're good grounds. They're not bad whatsoever, but they have, I'm an idiot. They have the coolest host hotel, which has completely changed, almost helped change my mind about Vegas because I never really liked Vegas. But when we go to compete, we stay in this hotel, which is again, the host hotel called Sam's Town. And ever since we went to the rodeo the first time and stayed there, I think for the next few months, everybody I fucking talked to, the first words out of my mouth were, have you ever heard of Sam's Town? The hotel is the weirdest fucking place I've ever been, and it is the coolest place I've ever stayed. Huh. And that beats out any fucking hotel I've stayed at on the Strip. It is the most weird, like, the hotel is almost like, it's the hotel from, like, levels 4 through 20. So the first three levels are, like, the casinos and stuff. But okay. It's smack dab in the middle of this giant-ass hotel is almost an atrium. And they have trees and a water fountain and a waterfall and a restaurant built in. And when you're under that atrium, it has a glass ceiling. So you're looking up, the sun shining in, or at night, the stars are out. And from the inside, all of the rooms, all of the interior rooms look like you're in New York. Like it is like buildings, like the exterior of buildings, like pushed side to side. So different colors, different architecture styles. I know it sounds fucking weird on this podcast, no, but anybody honestly, that's listening.
It sounds magical.
It's so great. I am so, I'm so fucking sold. I look forward to going to Sam's Town. It's ridiculous. I'm like, oh yeah, there's a rodeo, huh? I just want to go to the hotel. And from the Strip, it's almost like a 30-minute drive, which isn't terrible, but I don't care about the Strip when I'm staying in Sam's Town. Like, it's all there. Everything that you could want is there. Great food, entertainment. They have water shows at night. They have, of course, pools and hot tubs and all kinds of shit. So
a lot of gay guys are into water sports. So, I mean, I could see where that would be an attractive. Oh, wait a minute. You said water show. Never mind. Sorry. You said water shows. My bad.
God, I can hear you salivating over the fucking headset right now.
I'm urinating on myself. I'm having my own water show.
Oh my God. You totally are. On top of that,
No scat, Bobby. No, none of that.
Bullshit. Whatever. You can't go back now.
We really did digress on this episode. Now I'm distracted. I had some other questions, and now I'm sitting here covered in my own piss, and I can't think of what I was going to ask you.
I hate that, don't you?
There's a first for everything. the purse amounts and the awards. Buckles are awarded for certain competition or certain events at rodeos. And so tell me more about the prizes and the buckles and who gets what in the different competitions.
Normally with almost all the events, there is at the very end of day or Sunday, the second day of competition, the rodeo normally wraps up anywhere between, you know, 3, 4, 5, even 6 p.m. And then we have an award ceremony to basically award and congratulate the people that had the best time for their event for those 2 days, the 2 days combined. And that normally takes place like at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. And there's drinks. It's just kind of like a nice little setup that they have. And they award ribbons for that event for the top. Let's see. It would be like the top. So for second through fifth place, I guess you could say. If I got that right. Second through fifth or second through fourth. Get ribbons. If you are the best of the best for both days combined. Because they will say, okay, these are the best people from Saturday. These are the best people from Sunday, and the best person that won in this category is, and when they announce that name, you go up and you get a buckle. Your buckle will say the event, the year, as well as the rodeo that you attended. So anywhere from, you know, like I said, shoot dogging to any of the racing, the flag, barrel, pole bending, roping, any of those, there's a lot of ribbons that go out, but there's only one person that takes the buckle in each event for both days combined.
Hmm. Okay.
Sorry, there's also the purse that you would win money based on what place you came in. So even if you get a ribbon for being third place in shoot dogging or, you know, any of the other events, you walk away with some money. And that money will vary depending on how much money they put into that purse.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Is there any other final words you want to tell us about the Gay Rodeo Association?
I would say probably the biggest thing that I didn't mention would be, you know, we talked a lot about what's called rough stock events, which are the more hands-on, a little bit more dangerous events. Shoe dogging, which is steer wrestling. I mentioned that before. There is also bull riding and steer riding, as well as what's called ranch saddle bronc riding, which is you're riding a wild bronco on a saddle. And that's, again, staying on as long as you can. Then there was the horseback events, the pole bending, which is basically, have you seen the dogs at the on competition shows or like the where they run between those poles really quickly? Like they're dodging left and right, going
like,
through the...
Like sheep dogs?
Just regular dogs. When they have the competitions, like dog shows.
Like Westminster Dog Show. Yes, I've seen
Yes. There you go. Perfect. Yeah. So where the dogs are bouncing in and out of those poles really quickly, that's almost identical to what the horses have to do.
Oh,
there are
wow.
only, I believe there's five poles. The rider on the horse has to guide this horse as fast as they can to go in between these poles while not knocking any of them over. And then once they get to the end, they have to circle back and do the exact same pattern successfully and make it back through their where they came from as fast as they can to stop the timer. So that's another big one as well that most in traditional rodeo, only females are allowed to do. But within gay rodeo, men can do it as well. Or however a person would identify, they can compete in any and all events, which is really cool. And super unique about gay rodeo is that there's no really male or female events. It's all open to whoever they want to compete.
No gender
That's a big,
specific.
Correct. Honestly, at the very end, when somebody gets a buckle or a ribbon or some kind of purse amount, there is best of that day. And normally they attempt to request that somebody not decide. But I guess you could say, would you want to receive this in the category of best male or best female in that event? And then, of course, afterwards, you would get your buckle or a ribbon or however you want. Or you can put in the paperwork itself that you, you know, you don't want to be identified as male or female. And then that would be worked in, of course. But anyways, there's also three events I wanted to mention. Well, I guess you could say four of them that are really unique to gay rodeo and which I feel really get people involved because they're events that are targeted to people that want to do something a bit more fun that isn't as dangerous. And it's a great way to get your feet wet and also to see what it's all about without feeling like you have to, you know, strap on a helmet and a vest because you're afraid of getting gored kind of shit, you know? One of the events is called goat dressing, which is the one I think that you were talking about. It takes a team of two people, two individuals, and you get to pick your partner, of course. One person is holding a pair of white briefs or tidy whities. Anybody that wants to do it, if you don't know how already, we have people that show the best techniques or the best way to go about it, how to hold them, I guess you could say. While the other person, their whole goal, so your other partner, their whole goal is to, as soon as the whistle blows, you run from a white line all the way to a goat that is tied up to like a harness, like a dog harness. And that is being kept in place by a drag queen sitting down on this rope. So again, right out of the gate, it kind of makes you laugh. And it's kind of like, oh my God, I got to see this. So you run with your partner down. And if you're the one holding the other underwear, your partner is the one to basically try to catch the goat from running away from you. Of course, it's basically on a leash, but there is a lot of room for it to run. So you have to stop the goat, kind of straddle it and pick up its hind legs. And then the person that's holding the underwear has to slip on the underwear and up and over the tail and to make sure it stays in place. And then as soon as that's done, then both partners, you and your partner, need to run back as fast as you can to cross that white line for your time to stop. And your underwear have to stay on the go because if they fall off, you're DQ'd. So weirdly enough, you have to like make sure those underwear are going to like pulled up straight up wedgie style the go to make sure that they stay on because you'll be DQ'd. And funny enough as well, this event, as well as the next few that I'm going to talk about, are all buckle worthy as well as purse worthy. So you also get money for doing something that's a little bit less stress and just more fun. A couple of the other ones would be calf roping on foot, which if you know how to rope, great. If you don't, there's a lot of people that show you how. I'm one of the ones that kind of helps people to kind of get a good style of roping going on. But you basically just stand in one place and there is a calf that's next to you in a chute. And as soon as the chute opens, they take off running. You only get one opportunity to rope them. And if you do with the fastest time, that's that. You get, you know, a buckle or, you know, money or ribbon or whatever. And then the other two, one of them is called wild drag. So wild drag is a team of three, two people that identify as male, one that identifies as female, that would go out and they're spaced apart. One person, the person that would identify as female, is holding a rope that is around the horns of a big ass steer that is behind the chute. So that you have that set up. And then about 10 feet back, you have one of the males or one of the people that identify as male that is going to basically have the rope passed off to them from the identifying female. And then about 10 feet from that secondary person is the last identifying male who is in drag. Okay, so it sounds all fun and games, and this one's a little bit more on the intense side. But as soon as that gate opens, the identifying female would run and try to hand off the rope to the first identifying male and then attempt to guide the steer back to the third person. So that way they can jump on the steer bareback, meaning no saddle, no nothing, just ride on like skin to skin contact. You know all about that. And ride that steer.
Well, you had me at bareback, but then you lost me. Fuck, I'm not into farm animals, but I like the bareback. Well, anyway.
You don't know until you try. So they have to ride that animal bareback past a certain line for your time to stop. And so it's kind of an intense one. You're basically, you have the world's biggest dog on a fucking leash, and you are trying to have him behave. And it's a shit show. It's a good time. And then the last one, of course, is called Steer Deco. And that one involves a team of two. Similar situation, you have one person that is standing outside the chute with a big rope that is around the horns. And as soon as the chute opens, the other person has a ribbon around their hands, like a little lacy ribbon. And the first person that has the rope has to reel in the steer as best as they can to keep it from running or bucking or doing anything. Basically, try to keep it as still as possible, which is a shit show in itself. But then the person with the ribbon has to go behind the steer in the safest possible manner and tie the ribbon onto the tail and not have it come off. And that one is a little bit of an intense one, but it's really, really fun.
When I was out there in Utah, I remember I went horseback riding down there in Utah County. And I'd been horseback riding before, but it was definitely with horses that are used to people getting on and off all the time. No big deal. But I had gotten on this horse and it was used to people. But the thing decided that it wanted to lay down. And so I'm on this horse and it lays down and it starts rolling over. I was having trouble getting my foot out of that fucking stirrup. And that thing started to roll over. And I have great appreciation for horses and large animals, because if they want to fuck you up, they will fuck you up.
Yes. And a kind of a little bit of a side note, you are more than welcome to wear protection. I know you're not familiar with that, but
like, I've never even heard that word before.
I know. It doesn't surprise me. It's a means of somebody, you know, having self-respect, I guess.
Weird. All these new concepts. Okay.
Yeah. Just foreign to you. I know. ass hat. But people can wear, they can wear their own protective equipment, so vests, helmets, gloves, because, you know, it doesn't matter. I've seen one of the competitors that I see, she travels all the time, and I see her at most rodeos. She was wearing a helmet and a vest. I believe she was doing the steer, I want to say it was a steer deco. The rope got away from her, and when it got away from her, it kind of pulled her, so she fell on all fours. She had one foot up, one hand on that knee to like help get herself up, and the steer turned around and literally just full on headbutted her, and enough to like knock her helmet off, but enough to like throw her head up, and she fell backward. They normally don't stay to like, I'm going to fuck you up now, like I'm going to stay here and purposely trample you. They normally run, but if you're in the vicinity, they will try to get you out of the way to make a run for it. And if that involves headbutting you, side checking you, stepping on you, whatever it may be, and these have horns as well, so they don't know that they're going to end up goring you, but if they hit you in the right spot at the right time or at the wrong time, it can be bad. So it's a dangerous game. It's a dangerous sport, but like there's some events that are really fun and really easy. And normally when people are like, hey, I want to get involved, but I'm not sure if I want to just jump into like fucking bull riding, nobody does. If they want to, we normally, you know, of course we invite them out to a rodeo and show them how it works. And most rodeos have what's called a rodeo school that happens the Friday morning before the weekend. So you have the ability to see these things firsthand and have the ability to compete, not even compete, but I guess try your hand at them without having to commit to competing that weekend. So mm-hmm. it's a great, great opportunity to get a taste for things without having to fully commit, just in case if you're not sure. So that's kind of how I started as well.
Robbie, do you have any pictures of yourself doing any of these activities from your experience with the Gay Rodeo Association?
I sure do. Yeah, we have them actually on Utah's Gay Rodeo Association's Facebook page. The International Gay Rodeo Association has a Facebook page. Almost every single organization has a Facebook page and a website, as well as some of them have Instagrams and Twitters and all kinds of that social media stuff.
Well, there you have it, folks. This has been Robbie talking about the Gay Rodeo Association. Very fascinating stuff. I encourage you to check out those sites that Robbie was just talking about. Robbie, I'd like to get a few of those pictures to put on the Gay Florida Man podcast, Instagram, and social media so that people can see who you are and what you do.
I'd love to share that with you.
I'm going to close out today's episode with the same thing I tell you every week, Robbie, and that is to be good. And if you can't be good, be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Thanks, Robbie.
Thank you.